we try and find every opportunity that we can to showcase our skills and talents. We want to be seen as the kings of attention to detail.
Hello and welcome to KrugerToCanyons.com. I'm Adam Larking and I'm here to guide you through the next 20 minutes of interviews and sounds gleaned from my stay, courtesy of KrugerToCanyons.com at Sangeeta's Lubombo Lodge in the depths of South Africa's Kruger National Park. Right at the beginning of this podcast, you heard Jason Trollope, General Manager of Sangeeta Lubombo, and you can hear full interviews with him and other key members of staff on the Kruger to Canyons audio pages, including the head chef, the sommelier, the reception staff, and one of their highly trained rangers. Now, Kruger to Canyons offers a wide range of itineraries, one of which will form the basis of your dream African vacation. This is part one of an episode in which Kruger to Canyons' very own David Manton and I went along to experience a typical 24-hour stay in a luxury lodge. After a short morning's drive through the Kruger National Park via the Orpen Gate, we arrived at Sangeeta Lubombo to be welcomed by a smartly dressed and very personable receptionist called Advice.
This is quite magnificent already. Wonderful entrance. Wonderful reception area.
Would you like something to drink? I've got some pomade lemonade, iced tea, sweetened and unsweetened.
When we arrived, we were immediately made to feel very welcome and relaxed. There was no rush to get checked in, and we were given time to refresh ourselves while staff collected our bags from the car. We were shown around the reception area and its fantastic view across the bush towards Mozambique, and when we were ready, receptionist Advice took us to show us our rooms.
Welcome to room number 11. The room is quite remarkable. Glass is often used to describe it. Well, there is a lot of glass, a lot of panes of glass. There's lots of wooden lattices to give you privacy from around the site. They've even got a little nano iPod attached to the wall with music already loaded onto it, which fills the room. The whole place is sort of open plan. There are two sinks. There are two showers. One's inside and one's outside. My bed has got a lovely curtain surrounding it. And it's also got a massive tent-like mosquito net around it, so that's not going to be a problem. And on the balcony, I can see, is a bed with also a mosquito net draped around it. I can sleep outside if I want. The telephone's been put outside as well on the little bedside table out there on the balcony. So I might actually go and check that out and see if I can sleep outside.
The view from the rooms is really exceptional.
General Manager Jason Trollope again.
You overlook the river is below you, there's a constant flood of animals, including elephant and buffalo, lion and leopard on occasions, and walking through the river, up and down the river, we often have herds of animals, including all the antelope species moving up and down the river. So there's a constant hive of activity down below. And beyond that, the view sort of extends up into the granitic rocky ridges and the astounding vegetation that provides.
This is luxury that I am not used to, so it's a bit difficult to describe. This is five-star accommodation set in the side of a hill, a koppie, which slopes down underneath me. The river is only a few metres beyond that. The whole ceiling is covered with wooden lattice, floor-to-ceiling windows. There's floor-to-ceiling mirrors as well in the main area. Bathroom looks out onto wonderful bush scenery. This is wonderful. Wonderful, oh wonderful, wonderful. So, David, we've been shown our rooms. Talk us through what's happened.
Okay, we're at Sangeeta Lubombo, which is one of four Sangeeta lodges in South Africa. Two are here, Lubombo and Swaney, and we're very close to the Mozambique border, on the eastern side of the central Kruger Park. There are two operations in Sabi Sand, which is further south, called Boulders and Ebony Lodge, also part of the Singita family. Singita has also branched into Tanzania recently and set up, in partnership with the local community, a new concession called Grumeti up there as well. So five-star, wonderfully architected place. This is very distinctive. It's an open lodge. Lots of slate, lots of dark brown walls, huge doors, wine cellar, glass, big open views, and we're set right on the Nwanetse River here, which is a beautiful spot.
Now, I have to say my chicken sandwich with avocado and mayonnaise with an onion salad is absolutely delicious. David, how's your calamari?
Fantastic. Seems like it's fresh, which is amazing for the middle of the bush. Spicy little chili dressing on the side. Lovely fresh homemade bread. Yeah, great.
May I try one?
No.
You'll normally be allocated a ranger dedicated to ensuring your comfort and safety for the duration of your stay. He or she will drive your open game viewing vehicle, find sightings, and interpret what you see and hear in the bush. Here's advice again.
We've got two game drives a day, a morning game drive and an evening game drive. You'll get a wake-up call at 5:30, and then 6 o'clock, everybody meets here for tea and coffee, and whenever you're ready, you go out and drive. And then in the evening, it's 3:30, everybody meets here for tea and coffee, and then whenever you're ready, your guide will be here for you, and then you can go out and drive. And then other activities, we've got game walks also that you can arrange with your ranger. If you want to walk during your game drive, you can just stop somewhere and then walk for a few minutes. And then if you want to walk from the lodge, you can just organize with him, and then he can take you from here, and then you can walk whenever you want to go, maybe go to the mountains or somewhere. Also, we do bird watching that is done by your ranger during game drive time, so during the day, depends on which time you think it's best and also how the weather is.
Right. Yeah. Right. How many people per ranger do you have?
Usually we have 6 per ranger if we are fully booked.
Right.
But if we're not fully booked, sometimes we've got 2 people or 4 people per vehicle,
wow,
depending on how occupied we are.
Jared Glasson was our ranger for our stay, and Jared introduced himself to us after lunch. He took us through the basics of our forthcoming drive, and I asked him what type of experience he offers his guests.
Usually, I try and sort of give my guests a taste of what the concession is about. So it'll be an evening drive, which is their first drive, and I'll give them a basic rundown of what the concession is about and what sort of terrain we've got. We won't go too far, because most of it we'll see during the day. So we'll go in a beautiful elevated position and sort of give them an overview of what the concession looks like. And then the next morning is pretty much when it starts. The drive in the morning is about 4 to 5 hours, so we can then start go moving up into the north, which is at least a 2-hour drive, normal game drive speed. And then you've got the massive grass plains towards the west in our central areas and up in the north. There's so much space that you can just sort of focus on in one drive. I like to do mountains in the morning because it is a bit chilly in the morning. The mountains are not so cold. And then in the evening, I like to go to the central areas as well where it's a lot more visible. And I mean, it all depends on the guests as well. If they have a personal preference, if they like to do a bit of birding, I'll always go and sit at the water just as the sun is setting. And even there, just open a bottle of wine for them sitting on the river with a hippo's head height and waters coming over with a tangerine sky. It is phenomenal. We can always get out and do a bit of hippo walking as well. We've got a space where there's about 20 plus hippos wallowing in about a meter deep water, where we get out and stand on some elevated rocks in a perfectly safe position. And it's just, I guess I'm blown away by it, really.
What's your most memorable experience on a drive?
Okay, while viewing a breeding herd of elephant, about 30 individuals with about 5 or 6 very, very young babies drinking down at a river, sitting off-road about 30 meters, you know, just watching these animals, beautiful, quiet surround, and suddenly this growling and snarling and ripping and bush rushing look around, drive straight up the hill about 10 meters, and there is our mountain pride ripping a warthog apart just behind us. And eventually the elephants coming up the hill and chasing these lions around as if they were little kitty cats. So that was pretty exciting, and that all happened within a space of about 2 minutes. So that was pretty good. You come back to lodge still buzzing from that.
It's a remarkably open place. We're sat on the top of a bluff, probably about 200 metres above the river, and there's a fantastic view from a balcony of the central area, which is where we're now sitting. There's a 30 metre long narrow plunge pool, and we're sat on the veranda. And what a spot. We've seen giraffe passing by already.
I've never been to any place quite like this, I have to say. And Kruger Canyons sends people here if they want this sort of experience.
Yeah, this particular lodge features on our east-west axis safari, which is the luxury Royal Indulgence safari.
So we'd had our lunch and we'd rested. And now we gathered in the central lodge to take afternoon tea and snacks with Jared, our ranger, and Temba, our tracker. Our game drive experience was about to begin. First off, however, Jared took us through some of the essentials.
Obviously, being an open Land Rover, things are slightly different to being next to wildlife, so I ask at any stage, please don't stand. If you need to get a shot of something or whatever, just say, Jared, please move back, forward. Like that, I'll do that, not a problem. Chatting as we go, not a problem as well. The diesel engine is louder than what you can talk, so that's fine. And as soon as the sun goes down, if we do come across any animal, especially elephant and rhino, they don't take kindly to light. Things like lion, leopard, not a problem at all. We have a spotlight on the vehicle that you'll see that the tracker will be using to find any animals. And you can welcome to take photos and all the rest of it, and we can chat about it. We will be stopping shortly on the top of that hill that you see in the back there. Have a few drinks and snacks, and then on our way back we'll go and have a look at something. And our tracker's name is Temba. He'll be helping us finding this game for us. And if there's any questions, you're welcome to ask him. I have prepared him for the worst. I said that you may have some questions for him. But by all means, go for it.
One of the first things I noticed was the rifle hooked on the dashboard within easy reach of the ranger. Now, it's a matter of professional pride that a guide never gets you in a situation where the use of firearms is required, but it is a legal necessity for them to be able to use a rifle professionally.
Well, it's 4:30.
That mass of birds flying. See them over there?
Oh, yes.
Those are called red-billed quillias. Crop raiders in our books. They'll work together like those massive shoals of fish that move in one sort of beam. And you can get them in tens of millions. And if you've got big, massive, open grasslands or crops, they'll land on the inflorescence, which is basically the top of the grass with the seed. And they'll sort of come in a rolling ball effect. The front will land first, and by the time the back roll over and they start feeding, they're finished, and they come behind.
In the distance, Jared spotted a troop of baboons.
A troop of baboons. Oh, yes. Look at that. Just over there.
Tiny baby on the back there.
Yeah, that's that.
Now, a troop of baboons. In the animal kingdom, we get a few societies. We get a matriarchal society, which are your hyenas and elephants, which are run by a dominant female. And with baboons, we have an oligarchy society, which basically means that the power is invested in a group of males, so not just a single male. And those males are big, hairy, and scary. They're even big enough to be able to drive leopard and often lion away. You'll see that they'll be foraging on the ground during the day, and as soon as the sun goes down, up the trees they go. But you'll see that they have this area, and they roost in the same trees every night. Every night, and we have one troop that's outside of Sweeney. And as soon as the sun comes up in the morning, they're down and they're foraging the whole day again. And you're pretty much sure that if you follow baboons, you're stuck in the bush. You eat what they eat. They've got a very similar digestive system to us humans. I mean, we primates as well. So very similar, and they will be the first things to know if there's a predator in the area. They'll start calling and barking. There's always a sentinel up in a tree somewhere, and as soon as he hears sight or smell or sound or whatever of a predator, he goes, starts getting bananas. They sit on the branch and they shake it like crazy, bah, 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 if it's really close. And if the whole troop is still on the ground at that stage, the males will gang up and
And this guy just now was reacting to us.
No, that was what sounded like a mating initially. The sound that the male makes after a mating.
See, that other female is killing the baby.
Underneath.
Yeah. Underneath,
yeah. It's tiny.
It's nice light as well now.
And as soon as they get too big for underneath, they go to the top and sit on the top like a horse and hold on there.
From about 4 o'clock, we've got about an hour and a half of sunlight left, and it starts to cool down. So the best possible sort of game viewing opportunity to stick around the water. A lot of animals will come down to the water and have their last drink before the night shift takes over.
And so these guys that used to sleep under these trees on the river, they didn't know about malaria at that stage. So they thought that this tree with this yellow dust used to give them this fever, yet it was malaria, so they called this tree the fever tree. And this is our African jacana. Or lily trotter or Jesus bird. For obvious reasons that it's walking on water.
Okay.
But yeah,
there's another over there as well.
Yeah, there's a... Oh, you must... Hippo. Yeah, there he is, there under the tree. This is the dominant bull. He's seen us and said, right, just know that I'm there, although I'm sleeping underneath the bush. This is my water. You come any closer, you're going to have to deal with me. And then... if we sort of go any further, he'll start opening his mouth. People think they're yawning, but he's showing his weapons, his teeth. And biggest killers in Africa of man, next to the Anopheles female mosquito. But nonetheless, we're sitting on a weir at the moment, which was built in around the 1920s, for bringing Mozambicans in for the gold mining just outside the park. Mozambique's maybe 4 kilometers from here. This is the Nwanetse River. One of Kruger's most dominant rivers. Nwanetse meaning shining river. And often we get pods of hippo here, 10, 20 plus.
Wow.
So it's brilliant.
Useful spot.
Yeah.
So we were halfway through our first game drive, and I was already captivated by the surroundings through which we were being shown, the sounds and sights of an overwhelmingly diverse nature. The knowledge of Jared, our guide, made sense of each visual and audio encounter, turning the whole fascinating experience into a gripping, real-time safari documentary with the added excitement of not knowing what was coming around the next corner. With so many senses engaged and stimulated for such a period of time, it could have been quite exhausting, so a little break watching the sun go down was very welcome.
So it's about 5:30.
Just before 5:30.
And there... Try and describe what you can see in front of you.
Okay, well, we're sat at a spot known as the Poort. We're right hard on the border with Mozambique, sat up on a bluff looking over the Nwanetse River. The sun literally is dropping through the bottom of the horizon as we speak. Massive red disc. Just see how the shape's distorting as it gets close to the horizon. And we're looking down on a fantastic riverine system with open scrub, candelabra trees, and having a nice glass of iced coffee as we speak, watching the sun go down. You could count that sun disappearing in seconds now.
It's one big ball of orange red. Sun's almost fully gone.
Just the dome of it left now.
Before we arrived at the Poort, lodge staff members Catherine and Andrew had been setting up our bush snacks and drinks on a small table at the best vantage point possible for us to witness this spectacular sunset. Here's Catherine to explain.
Well, generally on every game drive, you'll do a stop where you'll stop and have drinks and snacks and whatnot. And on occasion, we do stops like this, where either it'll be a whole bushnack stop with all sorts of snacks set up at a particular spot, or we'll do something like this, which is a, as we call, a sparkling wine and chocolate stop. So we'll do chocolate fondues or chocolate-covered strawberries with sparkling wine and hot chocolate and whatnot. Very, very special stop.
And this is what you've got laid out for us now.
This is exactly what we've got.
What is special about this particular place?
The Poort is just stunning. It just has an absolutely gorgeous view. And I think the combination between having the Poort's view and a really stunning little stop like this, just they just work really, really well together. And it's just such a gorgeous view to sit on the rocks and relax and have your drinks here as opposed to somewhere else. I mean, they're absolutely gorgeous places in the concession in any case to go, but the Poort is very special.
Look at that. Almost completely gone. The pink scuff in the skyline is the only thing that gives it away. It's almost completely gone. It's just a thin red line now.
It's like a little bushfire.
And that's getting smaller and smaller. And now it's gone.
That's it.
The sun has completely disappeared. Fantastic.
Do you manage to time it so all your guests get to see magnificent sunsets that we've just seen?
We hope. We try and organise a time between us and the guides as to when we know sunset will be and what time would be the best time to arrive. And then we get here an hour or so beforehand to set up and do what we need to do, and we leave the rest up to them to get here on time so that you can experience the sunset.
What a terrible job you have. Here's Jared again.
From there, we leave just after the sun is set, and we then start on our nocturnal search.
Well spotted. With your eagle eyes.
Well, it is coming up to 6:30 now, and it's definitely night. We've seen the sunset, and now Jared and Timber, they're taking us out on a nocturnal spotting mission. We're searching for the nocturnal life. Temba's got the light and he's spotting, and he's got a red pane which he puts in front of the spotlight, so when we get up close to it we don't blind it. Wonderful stuff.
We came across four lions, which was quite nice. Three females and quite a large male lying up in a very open area. And shortly after sitting there, we heard quite a bit of rummaging through the bush just beside us. And straight up were the females and running straight after it. And just as the females were doing this, one of the males started giving it all and roaring quite a bit. And he came quite close to the vehicle. And as he started roaring, so did the females. We then followed up, and they decided to do a bit of a mountain excursion, and of course we follow. It's quite bumpy, but it is an experience of a lifetime. And to try and keep up with running lions to see what they're up to, you can't diddle-daddle through the bush. You've got to make sure that you know your oats. And sitting in a Land Rover going over a granite ridge is no easy feat. So trying to make your way around rocks, over bushes, trying not to do too much damage is sort of the main objective. But we eventually found that they joined up with another two females, and they were quite happy to see each other, which initially was that sound that we heard. It's difficult to try and describe a sound. It sounded almost as, initially it sounded as if an antelope had been taken by a predator, the squealing, grasping for breath, and really struggling for life. And initially that's what we thought, and then after seeing the females after that, then knew that it was just a meeting up of family members initially. So, and then they came back to the road and we followed and we sat and watched them in the red filtered light. Excitement, and that's the bush for you. You just never know.
Go see
Well, there you have it for part one of this Singita episode. Join us for part two at KrugerToCanyons.com, the audio pages. There you'll also be able to find more interviews with the Singita staff. Not only that, but you'll be able to hear from other friends of Kruger to Canyons who are all involved in making your African trip an unforgettable one. I'm Adam Larking, and I've been joined by David Manton of KrugerToCanyons.com. Thank you for listening.
I'm going to try and get a bed. Which bed do I choose? Maybe the balcony. Good night.
This podcast is brought to you by LittleSmasher.com.